I'm so excited to share with you that the doors are officially open for my first ever phone-free event that's happening in Los Angeles, California on February 28th at Mudwater Gather in Santa Monica, with the option for you to dive even deeper on March 1st. Now look, this event is about you. It's about you building connections and community and us all really bringing this analog revolution to life and reminding our hearts and souls what we truly crave most, what nourishes our being, which is co-regulating with other humans, having our mirror neurons dance together, sharing experiences together, but also learning together. So on top of all the community and connection possibilities for you, there's also an incredible lineup of speakers. I've got internationally renowned nervous system expert Sarah Baldwin, Nike master trainer Brandon Collingsworth talking about purpose and meaning, and Mandy Balak, who's the president of the Gathering Festival, which is one of the largest marketing and branding conferences in North America. So we're going to be diving deeper into what does the future look like to walk alongside technology and use technology as a tool. Now look, if you want to dive even deeper, there's limited space for a VIP dinner on the Saturday night. And if you want to go even deeper, if it's aligned for leaders, coaches, therapists, entrepreneurs, branding, marketing, whoever is called, there's a mastermind on the Sunday morning with even more limited seating. And that's going to be about what does the future look like to create in this world with technology. So if this sounds like something you're interested in, you want to find out more and save your spot, go to markgroves.com/future. I can't wait to see you there. Look at our society today. I would argue that the shadow side of goodness has never been so amplified in my lifetime. I'm 45, but I'm guessing that if you look back at times like World War II and you look back at human atrocities, the greatest atrocities were done under the guise, the intention of goodness. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Mark Groves Podcast. As you can see, if you're watching this video, I did not plan my outfit accordingly. I'm blurring into the background with gray on gray, but I had to do this podcast because, one, I'm so passionate about the subject of the shadow side of goodness and how that shows up collectively. But two, this is actually a follow-up to last week's solo episode, looking at the shadow side of goodness from an individual perspective. So we as individuals, right, we have to remember that for the individual, even if their behavior is manipulative through their quote-unquote goodness or their generosity or their people-pleasing, it's good because they're trying to maintain safety. They're trying to create security. They're trying to create control, even if it looks like they're giving up control, right? Like when you stay in the victim mindset and you use that as a lever point, as a leverage mechanism to other people, it seems powerless. It presents as powerlessness, but it's actually turning the knobs through pretending like you can't. And this is the shadow side of being a victim, which again, I have to always qualify as not negating the experience of victimization or that there is that. It's just saying, are we living in it? Are we actually using our experiences to become better humans and to create better human systems and better families and better cultures and all that kind of stuff? But this is the wild thing, is like you and I individually, when we relate to each other and we look at that shadow side, that's easier to map out. But what happens when people are prone to that and they get together in a group, and then that group uses that idea of for the greater good or in service of goodness to actually manipulate and to actually cause harm? But they don't know they're causing harm, because if morality or the moralization of a subject has captured you and made it so you support that movement, that ideology, that position, whatever it is. And again, this is not specific to any position. It's that all of us can start to use righteousness to protect our perspective. And if morality and shame was used on us to get our opting in, then we are likely to use morality and shame against people who don't agree with us, right? So we don't even know unconsciously if I've been captured by the use of propaganda and the use of these psychological nudge mechanisms, then I am likely to judge and shame other people because of that. Now, here's a really simple example. Look at our society today. I would argue that the shadow side of goodness has never been so amplified in my lifetime. I'm 45, but I'm guessing that if you look back at times like World War II And you look back at human atrocities, which when you look back at human atrocities, the greatest atrocities were done under the guise, the intention of goodness. If that doesn't scare the shit out of you, then I don't know what will. This is why we need to understand the psychological mechanisms that create this, because average people, good people, can do incredibly awful things, especially when they don't think they're prone to it. If you don't think you can be captured by an ideology, then that's exactly what makes you capturable. Now, here's the thing. Maybe because I've been more liberally minded my whole life and less conservatively political, I now find myself more of a centrist, although my actual views on humanity and policies and all that kind of stuff has not shifted. But the wings have shifted. They've shifted. And I feel like I speak for a lot of people when I say that there is a feeling of sort of homelessness in the political space, right? That there's not someone who's representative of what I would imagine is actually the common, you know, I think of these like far lefts and far rights. They're not representative of 99% of the population. And yet, you know, in the States, there's no other options. In Canada, the other options feel like they're few and far between, but we could copy paste this in any country in the world right now. And what we'd see is that there is this incredible moralization and polarization of what perspective you might pick politically. I said that all the subjects that are capable of being leveraged with the shadow side of goodness, which is I'm presenting as this is in service of good, but I'm actually capable of doing very harmful things like cancel culture, are all these very sensitive subjects. And if you look at it, the what's happened is that we have pooled whatever position you take on each one of these things. They represent where you are also politically, and that allows me to completely negate everything you say. Now, the evidence to me is so amplified because look how many people today, because of someone in their family who they vote for, they don't talk to them anymore. And what they chose from a medical perspective, did they get vaccinated or did they not? Are they pro-trans rights or not? Are they pro-biological men and women sports or not? And I'm like, these are such traps because we really need to be having a dialogue about all these subjects. And it is this moralization of what position you take that doesn't allow for us to hear different perspectives and thoughts on these subjects. Now, collectively, this is really hard. I'm not exaggerating when I've literally received thousands of messages of people being like, it doesn't feel safe to talk about anything anymore. And yet, isn't it interesting that we're willing to completely cancel any discussion saying that if we give someone a voice in about climate that isn't, the world is melting, and if you have any other view, you're a climate denier. We're not willing to give anyone a voice if they are critical of the vaccine, right? Because then they're anti-vax. We're not willing to let anyone have a conversation about things like DEI or thing, right? Because then they're not for diversity, equity, and inclusion. This means there's no spaciousness for dialogue, and what we're exposed to is just one perspective, because that one perspective is self-identified as being for the greater good. And if you don't believe in any of these things, because how could you not? If you don't believe in any of these things in their absolute way that they're presented, then you just must not be a good person. Now, the argument you hear about any of those conversations is we don't want to platform and elevate their voice. And this is happening in colleges around the world, but especially in the United States and in Canada, where we don't allow dialogue and discourse because it's in service of protecting people who are not adult enough to be able to discern these conversations, be able to discern and make decisions for themselves. Now, look, I don't actually care what anyone believes, but I really find that to be a very manipulative and arrogant way of presenting things. And what I have known, especially because I've worked in the pharmaceutical industry, I've worked in these spaces, is that there is viable criticisms to all perspectives, to all thoughts. It is so important that we explicitly state that when a relationship, interpersonal, familial, community, culture, collective, places feelings ahead of the pursuit of truth, then we actually end up in a very dark place. No healthy relationship has been created by protecting feelings, placing those ahead of everything. And so if that's true interpersonally, then that means that interpersonal micro engagement, when it's amplified to a meta of how humans get along en masse, it's the same thing. So we have to make the pursuit of truth the number one thing to do. And the only way to do that is through exploring the diversity of ideas, the diversity of perspectives. One of my favorite quotes is from Jonathan Haidt, where he says, "Questioning is sacred, dissent is productive. If you start to debate, you may discover something that transcends the binary. You may discover a third option, and it will inevitably be wiser than the first two." I think this needs to be a principle and a value of how we relate on every level. You know, my life is made stronger, more wise. I am made more powerful as an individual by surrounding myself not just with diverse thought and perspectives, but also from having a partner who offers a different world view, right? From having a wife who sees the world differently than me. I have friends who see the world completely differently than me, and I've learned so much from them. Now, it doesn't mean I, like you, can't be captured emotionally by things. And I think about a quote that I heard on a podcast. I wish I could remember the one where he said that if you have become emotional, like exceedingly emotional about a subject, it means you've been captured by it. And I remember checking in with myself being like, oh damn, I have. Like I'm extra emotional about this thing, which means I can't clearly think. We can't, when our amygdala, or we're in fight, flight, freeze, fawn, right? When our nervous system is activated, we can't use our prefrontal cortex. And I think we're so traumatized and so activated from the last 4 years, but the last however many years, but this fear, I don't want to say there's malice in its use, but if profit is the way that things like news companies drive, that's their primary intention because they're share held, the thing that gets the most attention on news sites is actually fear. So all of us have been traumatized, especially in the last 4 years, with death counts and constant fear, and the moralization of decisions. And if you look at the way that political parties leverage you joining them or voting for them, is by moralizing. If you want to save the US, then you must do this. And both sides say that. If you want Canada is, oh, the far right is the conservatives and the far left woke mob is the liberals. I say all this because, like, these leverage points, we're exhausted. We're exhausted of thinking about dying. We're exhausted of having all these psychological tactics used on us. So if you find yourself anxious, overwhelmed, and then you're still reading the news, you're still reading a Twitter feed, you're still consuming all this stuff, you're watching CNN, Fox, CBC, CTV Global, all of it is meant to amplify your emotionality. All of it is meant to activate the shadow sides of these things, because it is what creates one more consumption of the same thing that is wounding us. And it also is what has us take positions, political positions. And I think, like, if you loved your aunt or your uncle or your cousin or your brother or your sister before you now know who they vote for and you don't talk to anymore, or what they chose in terms of vaccination, but, you know, and now you don't talk to them, or, you know, they have a perspective on a specific thing that you just can't believe how right or left wing that is, and you don't talk to them anymore, then you've been captured. You've allowed an ideology to have you cancel and divide your community. And you know, it's like the more activated we are by it, the more curious we need to get about it. And you might be totally right in your perspective. You might say, that's bullshit, Mark. I know that I'm right about this. I know the stand I'm taking. I know. And it is that level of certainty that can be the red flag. And if you look, like, activism can become a trauma bond. Activism has a shadow side. It creates the trauma triangle, because in the trauma triangle, there's the perpetrator, there's the victim, and there's the savior. And guess who never becomes a perpetrator? The activist. They're the victim, which usually leads them to saving, but they're never the perpetrator. And so we have to be able to recognize that all of us can be perpetrators. I think of Sam Harris's book, Free Will, where he says that, like, if you were to switch experiences cell for cell, moment for moment with any human in the world, you'd do anything that they're doing currently in their life. We project free will onto other people through our own experience of free will. We say, well, I have a choice. I won't do heroin and live on the street. Like, why don't you just quit doing drugs? We moralize all these decisions. We project it onto other people. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's like if we were in Nazi Germany in the 30s, 40s, we're all capable of becoming a Nazi. And it's just, you might go, definitely not me. 100% you, 100% me, because all humans are capable of it. It's actually the recognition that we have a dark shadow side that allows us to be able to explore how it shows up and what appeals to it. And so I say all this because I desire repair. I desire healing. I desire all these things that I'm sure you desire too. But we have to call out how these things are being explicitly used. You know, in research where people identify as a victim, if two people have GoFundMes and one writes a story of trauma and the other one doesn't, the person who has trauma gets more money. And that doesn't negate that someone should write about their story. It's just saying that people who have psychological issues leverage that. Unconsciously, if you know you're going to get more power and more things, then you might leverage that. In studies where they looked at people who identified as virtuous, they were more likely to lie in studies. So what does that tell you? I find that we are in an exhaustive time where people don't trust virtue signaling anymore because it's been so exploited. People don't trust all the, you know, the selfies with the face mask and the needles in your bio and the flags and all the things because not because it's not important to support the things you want to support. It's because a lot of that has been moralized, weaponized, and so used to extract social position that people don't trust it anymore. It makes our bodies go, Like, I don't know, like, because we've met enough people who say that they stand for everything, yet when it comes to it, they don't stand for everybody. As long as you agree, I got you. But if you don't agree, you're gone. And what an important thing to recognize how we're all capable of that. So the shadow side of goodness on a collective level is capable of extreme atrocities. Just like the shadow side of goodness on an individual level, all of it robs us from true connection. And this doesn't mean, and this is so important, that there is not explicit harm and explicit use of shadow. We're talking about the implicit nature. A lot of times we'll say, yeah, but. We're not talking about the other stuff. We talk about the other stuff all the time. The explicit nature, the explicit narcissism of those types of behaviors. This is the more vulnerable, covert ways, or what someone might call covert narcissism. But this is the spectrum of that. And we just, this is what builds up our relational awareness. This is what makes us masters of human connection and masters of the human experience. And we have to not just study it so that we can explore how other people leverage it, but also how we might ourselves be prone to leverage it. And that means the exploration of it for myself too. So I love being on this journey with you. I'd love to hear what you think about what I've presented here and any feedback you have, and what has been your experience of the shadow side of collectivism recently? What has been your experience in the last 4 years of the shadow side and the moralization of different perspectives? And how has it impacted your body, your self-expression, your relationships? Because we're here to make this world better, to make our relationships better, and to heal collectively. Much love.